This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
On the breakfast grill today is Dato Carl Beck Nelson, who's Chief Executive Director of United Plantations. Being born in PJ, Dato Carl is a Danish citizen with Malaysian PR status. He's council member of the Malaysian Palm Oil Association and the Malaysian Palm Oil Council. He also serves in the Malaysian Palm Oil Board. In November 2014, he was also appointed to the Board of Governors as co-chairman of the RSPO, or the Roundtable for Sustainable Palm Oil. Dato Carl, you know, you're also known as a person with very strong opinions on many things concerning the industry. So we're going to look at some of the current issues surrounding the palm oil industry today. And let me start with the freeze of hiring of foreign workers. We've been getting some really conflicting statements. The Home Minister, Dato Sri Zahid Hamidi, says that there is a freeze on hiring of foreign workers. And yet the HR Minister, Dato Sri Richard Riot, says that the agreement to hire 1.5 million workers from Bangladesh still stands. So to your understanding, where do we stand here?
I'm not totally aware of the clarity in terms of this issue here. So we'll have to seek guidance in terms of what the government's stand is and try to work hand in hand with the government to overcome this situation. But one thing must be very clear. The palm industry has, for over a century, been very reliant on guest workers from abroad. And we must appreciate the fact that the palm industry today, as has been the case for more than 100 years, produces a fruit, and this fruit is perishable. So unless you have sufficient people to actually bring in the fruit, you will lose this crop. And this is the whole seriousness of this whole issue, namely that without sufficient numbers of people to help you to bring in the crop, you will lose this crop. So that's one thing we just have to bear in mind.
It was suggested some time back, and I think now the rule has been repealed, that the levy on foreign workers would be increased sharply. Do you agree with this?
We look at what is our competitive edge. So every initiative to increase our cost base will undermine our ability to compete in the international market with the other 16 competing oils and fats. Of course, we can appreciate, or I can appreciate, that there will from time to time be a pressure to increase costs, but this should be considered out very carefully, because we must in no way try to undermine the ability of the industry to continue generating viable income for the nation and, of course, the tax coffers.
Why are plantation jobs not attractive to the locals? I mean, how much are the foreign workers paid to work in the plantation?
Malaysia has a minimum wage. We must be very clear about that. And that is a positive thing. In terms of why is it very difficult to attract local Malaysians to come and work in the agricultural sector, well, let's also just try to take a step back and look at what's happening in, for example, Western Europe today, or for that sake, in the United States. Many of these more developed countries rely very heavily on guest workers from neighboring countries where the pay ratio is lower. You can ask yourself very clearly that if they didn't have this access to guest workers from abroad, basically many agricultural industries would come to a grinding halt. So to get back to your question as to why Malaysians shy away from the plantation sector, it's basically because it is a bit more arduous, it is more difficult, and of course, you're not working in an air-conditioned environment. But it is also important to point out that if you look at it from a point of pay point of view, today about 71% of the world population earns less than $10 a day. 13% of the world's population would fall within the category of middle income, namely those who would earn between $10 and $20 a day. So there's 84% of the world population which would earn less than $20 a day. If you look at the plantation workers, okay, the minimum wage within the plantation sector on a daily basis is 37 ringgits and 50 cents. But there are many other associated costs which relate to, you know, workers on a plantation. And these are, for example, free housing, free electricity, free water, free medical care. All of this adds up to between 30 to 35 ringgits per man day, depending on which company you work for. So to put things very briefly, the minimum waged plantation employees would earn between $15 and $17, putting them in the bracket of the middle income. So that is much better than 71% of the world's population today. So we must put things in perspective. And, you know, those who are productive, those who are willing to work hard, those who are willing to just give a little bit of extra effort, they can earn much more than that also in terms of cash payments.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning is Dato' Carl Beck-Nelson, Chief Executive Director of United Plantations. Dato' Carl, let's talk about the export taxes. I mean, it's been suspended for 11 months and now reinstated at 5%. Are you supportive of the idea of an export tax?
We must appreciate the dynamism of the vegetable oils and fats markets. And we must appreciate that there could sometimes be certain things which we normal human beings are not privy to, or we may not see the big picture to. So we tend to look at it from a micro perspective. But on the macro perspective, I think the government and the ministry knows exactly what it's doing because it has a flexible approach.
What kind of end result are they trying to achieve with something like the export tax or the lack thereof?
It is believed that they are trying to ensure that you are not just keeping an eye on the upstream sector, but also on the downstream sector, because these two hang together so closely like a set of Siamese twins. And without one, you'll be undermining the overall viability and ability to withstand shocks in the market if one is not strong and the other is very weak. So from time to time, there will be initiatives taken whereby maybe the upstream sector would require a little bit more wind in their sails, so to say. And other times, this wind should be directed more towards the downstream industry, namely the refineries. So I think on overall, we have to look at this like one body, and we have to sort of try to appreciate that there will sometimes be changes in terms of duties, etc. But on the overall, I think the objective is clear, namely to make decisions which is going to be to the benefit of the industry.
Now, if we look at the case of Indonesia, they have very high export taxes to the extent of over 20%, and Malaysia is 5%. Do you think that Malaysia is doing enough to support downstream industries and to protect their natural resources the way Indonesia is doing so?
Absolutely, I believe so. We must also try to look at things from a point of view in terms of the development status. Indonesia's palm oil industry is the largest in the world today, but their downstream sector is not as advanced as the Malaysian downstream sector today. And there you can say that it has been a policy whereby, you know, you give incentives to encourage investments and growth within the sector. So Malaysia is much further in terms of the development of the downstream sector compared to Indonesia. And I think that Indonesia is trying now to see whether they can catch up.
But I read news reports that say that Indonesia has been importing a lot of crude palm oil from Malaysia over the last 11 months. Are we not doing enough to use some of these crude palm oil to move them into the refining industry? Why are we giving them to the Indonesians?
You know what? I have a very clear view on these things. Water will always run to the lowest point. And if there is a commercial transaction which will benefit certain movements of oils, well, these will take place until an equilibrium is established. So I'm not here to comment in terms of how many tons. In fact, I don't know, so I don't really want to comment on how many tons have gone to Indonesia.
Dato' Carl, just want to turn the attention to El Nino, which is the buzzword these days. Everybody is talking about the El Nino and it's causing this heat wave in Malaysia at an unprecedented level. I mean, we hear of temperatures soaring to 40 degrees. How will this affect the palm oil industry?
When you have got prolonged periods of dry weather, this will, of course, affect palm growth, and with that, it'll affect production. We must also be a bit careful that we don't jump to conclusions in terms of determining that, okay, we have an El Nino right now. For the palm sector, we would say that if you have 3 months of a consecutive drought where your rainfall has been less than 100 millimeters in a month, then you will see a consequential decline in production 5 to 6 months down the road. So far, we've not had that this year on Peninsular Malaysia. We can definitely confirm beyond doubt that there was a very serious El Nino last year on the island of Kalimantan and also parts of Sumatra. And today we are seeing the consequential effects of that, namely in terms of lower production. So yes, the weather plays a huge part in terms of how well the palms develop and the overall fitness of the palm.
Where do you think palm oil prices will go this year? Because last year we saw that in ringgit terms, at least, palm oil prices have been quite steady, ending the year at around the 2,400, 2,500 level. But in US dollar terms, it's actually fallen quite a bit.
It has to a certain degree, you're right. But we are fortunate in the sense that the trades are made, transacted and then done in ringgits. So if we look at the overall situation, I mean, let's be very clear. There are generally three rules needed to be able to predict prices. And unfortunately, I don't know any of the rules.
Okay.
But I also want to make it clear that this year there appears to be a supply problem. Whilst demand remains strong, there appears to be a supply problem. And this is really pushing prices up, or at least the market is turning bullish. So in a nutshell, I would foresee price range between 2,500 and 2,800 on average.
What's causing the supply problem?
The supply problem is a function of Indonesia's severe El Nino last year, which has now resulted in the palms producing much less for the first quarter of 2016. And in this connection, we must appreciate the fact that literally Malaysia and Indonesia, these two countries, they account for around 57% of the world's total net exports of oils and fats. Okay, 57%. So if you see that one of these countries' supplies starts to be restricted or undermined, for example, due to El Nino, then you are actually hitting a heavy weighter. And that will result in very likely supply problems.
And yet the Indonesian government has a biodiesel policy. They want to achieve B20, which means that they want to have 20% of palm oil in their diesel. And Malaysia is trying to move to a B10 situation. Is this a good policy?
Well, every country will make their own decisions. And I think for Indonesia, they have committed themselves to the biodiesel mandates and the policy within the country because they also would very likely see that the palm oil crop is actually a small holders crop. More than 50% of all palm plantings in Indonesia are done by smallholders.
So is it just a matter of propping up prices for the smallholders?
I don't think it's a matter of just propping up prices. I think it's a matter of ensuring that the livelihood of many of these smallholders are in a way protected and not undermined, so they're not going to get anything for their agricultural produce.
Now, the U.S. did the bioethanol policy to no great success. What kind of lessons can we learn from there?
It is generally dangerous to invest in any industry which is kept alive through artificial subsidies.
And don't you think that the biodiesel policy is something that's quite artificial?
To a certain degree, yes, but also to a certain degree, no, because it all depends on the way you structure this. The Indonesians have been fairly smart, I would say, in terms of taking some of the margins or profits from the upstream sector and putting that into a pile which is kept aside like a nice little buffer for a rainy day, which can then be used to support the biodiesel industry in the event that stock starts to rise and prices starts to decline. And thereby you would then inject some of these funds to help to promote a greater biodiesel production and with that offtake. So from that point of view, they have got a fairly, how should I say, sophisticated structure in place.
And do you think that, this is very controversial. It makes edible oils more expensive because you're taking away supply from the inventories rather than let prices move on their own?
If you look at the overall situation, I would also then counter that by saying, okay, is it also not very hypocritical that the common agricultural policy in Europe spends about 40% of its total budget to sustain agriculture, which on the world market would not be competitive? I mean, what the biodiesel sector has done out here is a fraction of that. So I think, and the most important thing is that a lot of this is going to benefit the smallholders segment, which generally are less productive and have a higher cost base.
Dr. Carl Beck-Nelson, Chief Executive Director of United Plantations, is on the grill this morning. Dr. Carl, talking about Europe, France has decided or are deciding to impose 900 euros of taxes on the importation of palm oil, and that amounts to over 4,000 ringgit. That's almost double the price of existing palm oil. What is to be understood from this kind of move? Is there something that we're missing here?
It's very difficult to explain this because if you look at France, you know, being in a way like the kitchen of Europe, it's odd that they have to be so negative and discriminate so much against and single out one vegetable oil, and in this case it's palm oil. It is a splendid example of first-class hypocrisy, in my point of view. And it benefits no one because the substance behind it is flawed. This whole tax here, the way I have understood it correctly, is that they will impose a tax on palm which has not been certified as sustainable, whereas palm, which has got a certificate to prove that it originates from a sustainable source, will not be subject to this tax. So if you can supply sustainable palm oil, and you can do that in a certifiable manner, then you will not be subject to this tax. Mm-hmm. But it is fairly ironic that France, with so many ex-colonies down in Africa, where they produce palm oil today, should take such a negative stance towards some of their own people, so to say.
Now, I want to talk about the environment in a while, but you know, I use palm oil because I've been told that it's healthy. What is so healthy about palm oil? Can you tell us?
Palm oil has a very balanced fatty acid composition. It is extremely versatile. It is free of trans fatty acids. It has got no cholesterol. There are more than 400 studies which will tell you that consuming palm oil is in no way negative towards your health vis-a-vis consuming olive oil or many other oils and fats.
Or soy oil, for that
matter.
Look
here, the new villain on the market is the overconsumption of processed carbohydrates. And the general perception amongst people today is that if you have a high saturated fat content in your blood, it must be because you're eating saturated fats. But that's not correct. It's your level of saturated fat in your blood is very much more strongly correlated to the overconsumption of processed carbohydrates. That's the new villain on the market. And this is what the scientific fraternity, beyond doubt, have been proving. So why not let's just stick to science and stick to the facts instead of going out there and proclaiming all these myths, which is getting us nowhere.
And you think that the French sentiment will spread to a greater euro policy?
That is a bit too early to say, but the danger is certainly there. And, you know, would it not be a very sad and negative thing if a policy was implemented throughout Europe if it was flawed from the onset?
You sit on the board of RSPO. In fact, you're the co-chairman. Is palm oil really unenvironmental? I mean, I hear of lands being cleared and natural forests being destroyed. And we're all too familiar with the haze that afflicts us yearly.
Just like producing corn or rice, or for that sake, producing mangoes. You can produce these crops in a sustainable or an unsustainable way. The same thing applies to oil palms or palm oil. But we cannot run away from the fact that if you look at world total area planted up under oil palms today, if you put that into the context of world total agricultural land, the oil palm occupies 0.4% of that land. Nevertheless, in return, the oil palm produces one-third of the world's total supply and production of the 17 oils and fats. And the oil palm accounts for 62% of the world's total exports of oils and fats. So the oil palm punches way above its weight. In terms of sustainability, we must also appreciate that over the last 10 to 15 years, the scale determining whether you are producing something in a sustainable way or not has moved. You know, people are much more environmentally conscious today, and that's a positive thing. So palm oil can be produced in a very sustainable way, and most of it is produced in a very sustainable way.
Now, the RSPO has come up with some additional guidelines and requirements. How much improvement to the environment will this kind of additional requirements make?
This will have a huge positive impact in terms of not moving into areas which are considered to be environmentally fragile. And this under the RSPO is called RSPO Next. But I also want to make it very clear here that, look, the RSPO is a multi-stakeholder process. It's made up of people from the banking sector, from the NGO sector, from the growing sector, from the retailers, from the consumer good manufacturing sector, et cetera, et cetera. But what the growers have insisted is, fine, we will embrace these standards and we will go forward with these standards as long as it is based on a commensurate effort. Now, what do I mean with that? We have got to stop just putting the monkey on the back of the growers, because if the consumers demand that the growers have got to step up one notch and produce palm oil in consideration of some extremely strict criteria on sustainability, then the growers also demand the spirit of commensurate effort is there, namely that retailers, consumer good manufacturers, must also buy what is being produced. So in a nutshell, if we produce, you buy. If we pull, you pull. If we push, you push. And if we produce, you buy. So that spirit must be there, because if not, then we cannot see much other sort of things to say that this is just one big pot of hypocrisy.
How do you get all the planters to buy into this kind of additional guidelines? Because isn't it costly to adhere to these guidelines?
Absolutely. It is very costly. And therefore, again, the spirit of commensurate effort. The RSPO is a voluntary scheme. And the RSPO Next is also a voluntary scheme. So unless there is a buy-in to this by the consumers, by you guys, then don't expect that the producers and the growers should bend over backwards and make a triple somersault to satisfy you.
So meaning paying a higher price for palm oil?
Look here. Exactly. And is it too much to ask the consumer to pay a small little extra for something which takes so much greater effort to do? Because if that is not the way forward, then how are we ever going to get the industry to move in a united and consolidated manner in that direction?
My mind keeps going back to biodiesel. I mean, if there are environmental factors involved, should we then worsen it by, you know, taking a part of the stock out to put into cars?
This is for the regulators to decide. It is not for me to decide.
But you have a view, right? You're with the RSPO. What is the RSPO's view on the biodiesel policy?
Quite frankly, I'm not aware of that. But I mean, I'll make it clear. The main priority from my personal point of view is to produce oils and fats for the traditional markets, namely for food and for the oleochemical sector. And the third priority must be for the biodiesel sector. So the biodiesel sector could be used and should be viewed upon, in my view, as a safety net to protect the livelihoods of the smallholders in case prices start to go very down. And, you know, we must get back to the fact that in 1992, the United Nations Consensus on Sustainable Development stated that sustainability should go hand in hand with action to raise the living standards of the poor. That is fundamental.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. That was Dato' Carl Beck-Nelson, Chief Executive Director of United Plantations, talking to us about the current issues and current developments in the palm oil sector. I'm Julian Ng for The Breakfast Grill, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.